This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, go to the VSiN website right now. You want to know why? Because we've got top betting picks with all the splits. That's Josh Applebaum doing his thing. Steve Mackinnon, power ratings, all kinds of fun trends to get your appetite warm. And then the Olympics. Nigel Seeley has picks, predictions for the Olympic soccer taking place right now across the pond in Paris. I'm Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher today. Sharp Money with you for the rest of the week. Ben Wilson's got you on Thursday and Friday. Joe Cirillo next week until Patrick makes his return next Friday, correct? Next Friday? Next Friday, Patrick will be back. I know we're keeping the seat warm. All of you are excited for Patrick's triumphant return.
Nothing worse than a warm toilet seat. Only worse than a warm toilet seat is a cold toilet seat. Either way on that one.
I actually have one of those little, puffy toilet seats, so I never have to worry about
that. You live in 1983?
No, I have like a cover. Hey, listen, when you're a big guy, you take a lot of, it happens.
I respect the padding.
I need it, You gotta stop. I want to keep my bare backsides nice and soft. All right, let's move on, please. Eric Lindquist from Odd Shopper is going to save us from this conversation. All right, Eric, help us settle a debate. We were talking about this on the other side, and I'm just kind of not that I'm down on the Niners. I just think relative to market expectations, I'm not high on them. I think Detroit and Philly, to me, are right there, even though the odds are kind of saying that they're the definitive, second tier in the NFC. Do you think that gap is tighter between the Niners and those other top two teams, Philly and Detroit? Do you think San Francisco still, despite all the, weird stuff going on behind the scenes with Brandon Ayuk and some of the injuries they're dealing with, do you still think they are the top dog in the NFC?
Yeah, I think the Brandon Ayuk thing was a lot of ado about nothing. He's basically under control of this team. There was never going to be any circumstance where he had leverage to be able to sit out. So for me, Brandon Ayuk, I think he was just firmly going to be a part of this team. Nice to see him reporting right from the get-go. But I do think that San Francisco's markedly better. I mean, offensively, defensively, outside of like a Baltimore meltdown, outside of a bad first half against Detroit last season, we just saw them roll as a juggernaut until the Kansas City matchup at the end of it. You're seeing them around plus 300, best available number on FanDuel to win the NFC. I think that's about fair. I mean, I don't know about it being close with Detroit and Philadelphia. Philadelphia will see the defensive side of things, maybe with Saquon Barkley firming up the running game. We see them offensively take over some spots in Detroit. I think they have the best offensive line in all of football, no question there. But still a team that at plus 550, it's still kind of in a prove-it territory for me and a much more difficult NFC North this time around.
All right, let's stay in the NFL because the team where I've seen Brandon Ayuk as a potential destination for is Pittsburgh. And I know you have a futures play on the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, quite frankly, there should be a CIA investigation into what the schedule makers did to Mike Tomlin this year. I don't know what that guy did to anger someone up there in the executive box, but the Pittsburgh Steelers have an absolute grind this year, and you don't think highly of them with that schedule, do you?
I surely do not. 8.5 being the number consensus across the industry. You can get it at minus 125 still on the under. I love the under of 8.5 wins there. Mike Tomlin, he's never produced a losing season. I do not care when you have to play Baltimore, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Kansas City, Cincinnati to finish out your schedule. If you add up all of the teams in terms of implied win totals for the entire season, Pittsburgh's got the most difficult strength of schedule amongst every team in the NFL. No doubt about it. Everything you said is perfectly in line with what I'm seeing. It is a difficult gauntlet of a schedule to have Russell Wilson at the helm of your football team.
Eric, you're kind of doubling down on the NFC South here. We'll start with the Falcons, who I'm on board with this. I mean, I just don't see 10 wins. I think that entire division is very mediocre to me. And you look at a team that's coming into a season. I mean, when was the last time the Falcons got the 10 wins? It's probably the Matt Ryan days, right? It feels like a big jump. You're asking a lot of Cousins coming off the Achilles, new coaching staff, new everything. And in the panic situation, that's just kind of looming. Like you talk about distractions in San Francisco. There are a lot of distractions in Atlanta this year.
Yeah, and Atlanta invited all of them on themselves by taking Penix there at 8. So congratulations to them on getting their quarterback and their quarterback of the future, even though he's an elder statesman compared to everybody else coming in from this rookie class. But I love the under of 9.5 wins for Falcons. And yeah, I'm going to be doubling down. I'm looking at Tampa Bay in that division. Took a look at New Orleans, too. But I think defensively, Tampa Bay will do enough. And then shoring up Baker Mayfield for another season. Mike Evans just continuing to roll later stages of his career. Absolutely love what they did. Also adding Bucky Irving, who I think is going to be a sneaky guy in the running game. Rashad White's efficiency numbers kind of tailed off. If Tampa Bay can really excel there, I love the additions that they had from the rookie class. And then Atlanta, they end up using their second, third, fourth rounds to improve their defense, sort of. They didn't help their secondary in any way.
I think we might have lost Eric there, unfortunately. He was very excited about his NFC South.
I liked what he was bringing. Hopefully we can get it connected with Eric again.
Yeah.
He does it. He has a bunch of baseball plays we got to hit on as well. This gives us a moment real quick, though, for me to sneak in a baseball play real quick.
Yeah, do it.
Coming up here, we've got the Mariners, and I'm going to back Luis Castillo against the Angels, man. I'm going to go with total outs recorded, a plus money price, over 18.5 on Luis Castillo. Look, nothing is sexy about the Angels lineup at this point with no Mike Trout. So we'll go plus money, all the info, VSiN.com/picks. We do have Eric back. We look like we are all connected and all good there. Apologies for that, Eric. Let's stay in the South, the Falcons. American Hi-Fi had a song in 2001. It was called Flavor of the Week. Seems like Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta made them the Flavor of the Week, and you disagree with that.
I sure do. And also, this has a number of different things going on with it. We've got the Falcons that did try to increase some defensive numbers across the board. Second, third, fourth round getting used on defensive side of the football, but none of them at the cornerback position, none of them to help out that secondary, adding defensive linemen and not really something that I think that they needed a ton of there in Atlanta. They're pretty stout against the run in 2023, but I think Kirk Cousins won a lot of fluky football games, 2022, 2023, Minnesota Vikings days, a lot of one score games, and that can easily go the other way. You look at this division, Tampa Bay still feels like the undervalued team to me there, offensively, defensively, lots of pieces that they picked up. Bucky Irvin, if he can help out efficiently in that running game as well, I think he's a much better running back than people are giving credit for coming out of Oregon. I like Atlanta under 9.5 wins, and I really like Tampa Bay to come out of that NFC South this time around.
Yeah, it's how often do you get the defending champs of a division at over 3-1 to win that division? Like, that is just
not very often.
Yeah, that feels like that's something that even if they don't win it, it's just a bet you've got to make, because throughout the course of the year, as you know, Eric Lindquist joining us from Odd Shopper, follow him on X at Eric Lindquist, ups and downs. Like, Tampa could start fast, Atlanta could start slow, come back on the other side, and all of a sudden, you know, Tampa Bay squanders it down the stretch, but you have options with a long season when you're betting a division at a price that's, you know, only four teams can win the division, right? You're getting over 3-1 for Tampa. Very interesting price there as the NFC South kind of meanders its way along. Should be a really interesting season. All right, let's switch to baseball. I'll start with this game. I looked at the Nerfy hard in this Tigers-Guardians game. I couldn't lay 50 cents for it because Bybee has these moments where it just blows up, but you think the under 7 is a wager to make.
There's a little bit of value still sitting at 7 year Tanner Bybee.
I think we're still having connections problems with Eric there. Unfortunately,
yeah.
We're going to work to get him back.
I'll give you guys Eric's play just because the connection seems off there. It was like trying to make up. He had a chipmunk thing going on just because something with the internet, probably on our end. All good. Eric was awesome. We'll talk to him again down the road. So he's going to back Michael Wacha and the Royals first. That's where he's looking at. He's going to look at the Guardians-Tigers game you just mentioned, under 7 at even money, which I really like. I'm on the plus money in Jack Flaherty at about $1.30. Juan Soto to hit a homer today for the Yanks against it is Sean Manaea for the Mets at 5-1. And then Robbie Ray making his debut for 2024.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything from Robbie Ray yet.
Over 4.5 Ks minus $1.45.
I like it. I like the Robbie Ray over a lot for sure. I think the one thing I've noticed with the pitching props for guys that are starting their first game after a long layoff, that's where the advantage is in the market. Now, I haven't heard anything on pitch count for Robbie Ray tonight. I was asked a very similar question on a show this morning, and I was asked how I approach betting on pitchers that haven't pitched in a long time. And it's twofold, right? Like, we're a very visceral sports betting society now. We want to see something before we bet it. So it's hard for us to fathom betting positively or negatively on a guy that we haven't seen since, I think, last year. It's been over a year since Robbie Ray has started. So there's definitely some trepidation with risking something on a guy that you haven't seen. But you also have to kind of look at it from the other spectrum. The books haven't seen him either, so they have no idea what to expect, and that's where the upside, the downside can exist. So if you have any information on how many pitches he might throw tonight, and you have a leg up. I noticed that there was no outs prop for Robbie Ray, and I thought that was intriguing.
Well, sometimes they wait closer to first pitch, maybe when they can get more information.
Exactly.
But what I'd say is the Los Angeles Dodgers, it's pretty irrelevant what southpaw you want to throw their way. The best OPS in baseball against lefties. The most home runs in baseball. The third best batting average. I will be on the Dodgers team total. Got over 4.5 at even money. More on that later in the show.
All right, good stuff. Some technical difficulties there with Eric, but he had some great picks and some great insight. Of course, you can follow him on X at Eric Lindquist. He is a handicapper with oddshopper.com. All right, on the other side, three-point stance. We'll talk a little more NFL. Any other quarterback battles worth debating? Stay with us, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour here on Sharp Money. It is Wednesday. I'm Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher today. Dustin Sweetelson along with us as well. Time now to go back out to the Progressive guest line. Joining us is Ted Wynn. He is from The Athletic, NFL film analyst. Follow him on X at FB_film analysis. Ted, great to hop on with you here today because we've got a lot of questions about some of these quarterbacks, and I think some of your expertise can help us get to the bottom of the dilemma. So we'll start with Jordan Love, who wants to get paid. I think he probably feels like he deserves to get paid. What does the analysis tell you? Is Jordan Love, is the juice worth the squeeze?
I think so. I mean, it's a short sample size. He really started playing better towards the last 8 weeks of the season. But also, we have to remember that the Packers offense was extremely young. I think their top six receivers in terms of receiving yards were all under 24 years old. I think only Bo Melton was 24 years old. So as they got better, as they kind of learned the playbook and knew where they were supposed to go, the offense looked a lot better, and that's when you really saw Jordan Love kind of take off. And when you look at his game, you know, you see the flash, you see the ability to throw off his back foot and make those amazing throws, but you see a lot of stability as well. You know, he's able to navigate the pocket, he's able to avoid pressure, which is a very stable stat, and he's really good in the quick game as well, throws under 2.5 seconds, and I just thought he showed a good mastery over the game, and he's playing for one of the best play callers in the league, and LaFleur, and I think he's just going to flourish in that type of offense next season. So I can totally see why he wants to get paid. I mean, he took kind of a bet on himself deal last year, and I think he did well enough to deserve one of those contracts. And you know, in this landscape, you just can't wait for a quarterback to play, two or three years and then award him. Especially in his situation, where he had to wait under Aaron Rodgers. I think this is his time to get paid.
Full disclosure, Ted, I was the last member of the party to buy into what the Packers and Jordan Love did last year. The play calling was like a revelation from Matt LaFleur down the stretch. They went 6 of 8 of their final regular season games. But here's my qualm with this, and it's an issue I'm having with the Texans this year. The whole league knows what they did to make it work a year ago. Why do you believe Matt LaFleur is a play caller, what he did last season figuring this out? Do you see it as being something sustainable for Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought Matt LaFleur was a top play caller. I mean, you know, when he first got to Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers was struggling. Some people thought he was over the hill, and then all of a sudden he's in LaFleur's offense, and he's an MVP, and the Packers offense has been one of the best in the league. So I think he's always been a very strong play caller, and just watching some of his designs and some of the creative stuff he comes up with. I think he's always been one of the best. So I think that part of the Packers offense is always going to be there. And as far as a young talent, when you just look at that receiving core and, you know, how much guys they have, how many guys that look like they're about to break out, it's a very interesting receiving core. They might legitimately have two or three guys break out next year. And as far as Jordan Love, like I said, there is some stable, good stats to look at that is encouraging if you're banking on him breaking out next year.
Let's move on to the Jaguars. Every time I look at stats and numbers revolving Trevor Lawrence, I always expect to see top 10, and I usually don't. It's just outside the top 10, just on the fringe of the top 10. He's kind of flirting with being that top-tier quarterback, but here's the problem, Ted. He was drafted first overall. The expectations are sky high. He's got all the weapons in the world. He's got even more weapons this year. I know there's been some changes, but he's got a ton to work with down there in Jacksonville. What needs to happen with Trevor Lawrence in order to take that next step? So we're not talking about him knocking on the door of the top 10. He is a top 10, top five type of quarterback.
Yeah, I think with Trevor Lawrence, you know, when you look at the team around him, obviously in that first year he had to deal with Urban Myers, and we know that was one of the worst situations for a quarterback to be in. And the second year with Doug Peterson, things got better. And in that third year, you know, the offensive line dealt with a lot of injuries. Calvin Ridley wasn't quite the guy who they thought they were going to be. They switched play callers to Press Taylor. And when you look at some of the stats, you know, that Jaguars offense with all the injuries they had was one of the worst in the league. But saying all that, you know, like you still need Trevor Lawrence to break out, and you still need to see him kind of live up to that contract he's gotten, and he just hasn't so far. And we can make all the excuses we want for him. We still have to see it on the field, because, you know, he might have to deal with a lot of adversity with Jaguars, but he has to find a way on, you know, to get past it, whether or not that's unfair or not. If you're getting paid that kind of money, you're going to have to produce like a top five type of quarterback soon. And, you know, sometimes you have to be able to surpass your surroundings, and we'll see if Lawrence is able to do that. I think the Jaguars offense is going to be a lot better next year. I think Brian Thomas Jr. fits what they need a little bit more with a big outside receiver, and the offensive line should be better. But the play calling, I think, is still who is going to be the play caller is still going to be a big question for the Jaguars, because if Press Taylor is still going to be that guy, he needs to be a much better play caller than he was last year. And if he struggles, does Doug Peterson take over? Because we know he's proven, and Lawrence had his best year when Doug Peterson was play caller.
I agree at all counts. I do have a lot of questions about not the physical ability of Trevor Lawrence, but it's more the mental makeup. Like, where's that killer? Right? Where's the ability to put teams away, to go out and stomp on throats? I just don't see that from him. So I agree with you on all accounts there. And Brian Thomas Jr. is an interesting guy. I'd love to get your thought on him, because he's 40-1 for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And I don't think enough is being made of just how productive he was at LSU. And I know he had neighbors on the other side, and I know that team was in a lot of shootouts, but you do deep dives on film, Ted. You're the best when it comes to that. When you see what Brian Thomas Jr. can be for Jacksonville, do you project him to make an impact right away rookie year?
I think so, but I don't know if he's going to be rookie of the year, because, you know, for him to be the rookie of the year, he would have to, you know, maybe get like 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns. And to me, Brian Thomas Jr. is not a finished product, and, you know, which is pretty incredible, because he was extremely productive at LSU. But he's a height, weight, speed freak that's able to get off the line of scrimmage and beat guys deep. And so much of his production was on fade balls last year. But in the NFL, you have to be a little bit more nuanced to have huge production. But I just think the ability to win on those fade ball and go balls is exactly what the Jaguars needed. They tried to slot Calvin Ridley into that role last year, but that's just not who Calvin Ridley is. But Brian Thomas Jr. is that guy that can produce a deep threat. So even if he gets like 800 yards and, you know, five touchdowns, but he's making defenses have to put two safeties back and opening up space for guys underneath in that offense, then he's going to be kind of a better force multiplier than Calvin Ridley was for this offense.
Ted, I think the Niners are a team that obviously need to be considered amongst the elite in the NFL, but I think that gap between the Niners and the rest of the NFC is a little bit smaller than perhaps the market is indicating. I think Philly and Detroit, maybe it's more weakness up front for San Francisco that I'm seeing. What are you seeing with the Niners, most notably on the defensive side, that makes you think they could or could not have another elite unit this year?
Yeah, I mean, with the Niners, you know, they're having to pay all these guys. They have Trent Williams, who's kind of having a contract dispute now, but maybe they end up saving money with an extension with him. We know about the Brandon Ayuk situation. So they're kind of facing consequences of being a team that has a lot of star players. They have to pay these guys, and when you pay the top guys, you lose depth. So they're kind of struggling to fill depth in. Dre Greenlaw is going to miss, you know, at least a few games to start the season, and he's a huge part of their defense as well. And the defensive line isn't the monster that it used to be as far as just being able to go 3-4 deep and just being able to constantly rotate in all these great players. And Chris Kocorek, who is one of the best defensive line coaches in the league, might be able to coach some guys up and you know, get those guys going. But right now, when you look at it on paper, they have a lot of good, solid pieces on the defensive line. And then you have Nick Bosa, who obviously is a blue-chip player. But when you look at the depth chart, that defensive line just isn't what it used to be, especially losing Eric Armstead, who is such a huge part of that defensive line, especially in run defense. He was by far their best run defender. And whenever he missed games, you really saw that run defense take a hit. So, you know, I think they added some pieces in the secondary, no real impact type of players. But I think they're counting on better coaching, helping to improve that defense. I don't know if they have the depth to quite play at the elite levels they have played in before, but that offense is so good that if they could at least be a consistent top 10, top 12 type of defense, they should be right back in the championship mix.
Ted, 45 seconds. If they trade Brandon Ayuk, what does that do to this offense? Can they make up that production?
No. I mean, unless they get another X receiver that could win deep and run that type of route tree, which is going to be really hard to do at this point of the offseason. I think it'd be catastrophic to lose Brandon Ayuk because they don't have anybody else on the roster that does what he does. And it's hard to find a player at his level. Obviously, those guys are getting paid top of the market type of money, and that's what he's looking for.
Ted Wynn, Athletic, NFL writer, film analyst. Of course, follow him on social media at FB_film analysis. Great work as always, Ted. We appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Catastrophic if they lose Brandon Ayuk.
I knew he would have an immediate reaction.
Who am I to disagree? Again, he's much deeper into the analytics and the stuff than me. But again, there wasn't anything positive I heard about the Niners in that handicap you just gave.
I tried to downplay Ayuk and what he is and thought Kyle Shanahan could be the mad scientist to make up for it.
Maybe we're wrong.
Ted, who watches more tape than 100%. Anyone out there, that is a big-time word to use.
Catastrophic. I'll tell you what's not what is catastrophic is my baseball picks today. Hopefully we turn it around. We'll do a little college football on the other side. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Last hour, best hour, Sharp Money Wednesday. Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, and joining us now via the Progressive guest line, this gentleman and myself were just reminiscing on some old days that I had down there in the Atlantic City area. He is Scott Grayson of 97.3 ESPN, Eagles reporter, also works in Philly for Fox 29. Follow him on X at @SGraysonFox29. Scott, we won't go too much about reminiscing on the Tilton Inn and all the beautiful trimmings that we used to eat down there in the South Jersey area. Let's focus eyes on the prize here, because the Philadelphia Eagles, I saw them reporting for camp. Everyone's all excited. I saw Jalen Hurts running out. Everyone was cheering and yelling. Expectations are high in Philly this year. What's the vibe for you heading into camp for this Eagles team?
Yeah, they are high, and I think they should be. I mean, when you look at what they have on this offense and this roster in general, but particularly on offense, with Kellen Moore, and that's the key, calling the shots. And look, his arrival was put right in front of our faces today because everything they were doing had a lot of motion to it. So they were already doing some different things than they had before. Of course, Saquon Barkley here now. So the expectations are high. And look, you know, one of the things I think when you look at differences between last year and this year, you know, last year they're coming off the Super Bowl appearance and Jalen Hurts had gotten his new deal and he was getting a lot of publicity. We didn't hear a lot about Jalen Hurts in the offseason. The guy came in today, he was very crisp today at practice, hitting guys in stride when he was throwing the ball. And I know, look, there's no pads. It's day one. But there's definitely a lot of reasons to be optimistic when looking at this Eagles team this year.
Scott, tell me if I'm being fair or out of line here. When I looked at the Eagles a year ago, It wasn't about a player. It wasn't about a coordinator. To me, their biggest issue was they were immature because Nick Sirianni has these moments of immaturity, and that's why things kind of devolved down the stretch. Does it feel like that's fair, and do you think that could have been addressed with the additions they made at with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio coming in at the coordinator spots?
Yeah, I think that is somewhat fair, because obviously what happened was, they started 10-1, but there were issues going on behind the scenes, and you could argue that perhaps there was some immaturity and unable to handle the tough situations that arose that ultimately fractured and led monumental collapse for this team. I mean, look, as we sit here, you know, we were wondering at the end of the year, was Nick Sirianni even going to keep his job? And what they did was, looks like they brought some adults, put them in the room, and they told Nick, we want you to grow up a little bit and to just handle the CEO of this team. And he's embraced that role to his credit. And I think what we saw and heard today from him and Jalen Hurts was that they are ready to move forward and they don't want to talk anymore about this stuff. And they did the right things, said the right things today. And I think what your viewpoint, I thought your perspective was pretty much spot on. And it's going to be interesting to see. And we won't know until the heat really gets turned up, right? Once the games start coming, the live bullets are flying. How Sirianni, how Hurts, how the rest of the team, really. I mean, we also went through a time where A.J. Brown didn't speak to the media last year. Everybody's going to be looking to Nick and taking their cues from him. And I think there is a level of growing up that needed to take place from the antics that he was doing. And look, some of the fans in Philly, when everybody's winning, they kind of liked some of that trash talking and the flashiness. But as they started to lose, there was no room for that. And I think that they've now reached the point, and Nick's reached the point where you've been in the league now a few years as a head coach. It's time to start acting like one.
Yeah, and I think that's the good news, is if the biggest flaw, if the fly in the ointment, Scott, is maturity, well, that's usually something that's coachable, that's teachable. And I know it's the coach in this case that is the one that's a little bit immature. But when you bring in other really smart coaches around you, and sometimes the best head coaches, it's not because they're the ones that are the smartest. It's because they surround themselves with the smartest people. And I do think the room got a lot brighter when you bring in Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore. I think Fangio, especially coming from Miami, I mean, that was such a terrible fit. I think his culture, his vibe fits much better in Philly. And that's kind of the next step of this equation, Scott. Is Vic Fangio's defense, based on the Eagles had a ton of problems last year, moving people all around, the end of the season was a disaster. Is that the right guy? Is that the right fit? Because he's a pretty hard-nosed individual. You go watch some of that, the exit interviews down there in Miami. They were not kind to Vic Fangio. Yeah. What is the vibe in Philly now as we get a new culture with this defense?
Yeah, that's going to take a little time to really start seeing how it rubs off from the players. But I think it's good. What these guys went through last year, and you saw it on the field, I'm talking about the players, there was so much confusion, so much lack of communication. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like they were playing in a haze and they didn't really truly know where the other guys were going to be on the field. And I think that came from changing coordinators in the middle of the or play callers on defense in the middle of the season. It was just bad. I mean, if they had to do it over again, they would do it differently. So you bring in a stable force, a guy who's got a lot of experience here, an adult, as we talked about it, that you want to bring in, hard-nosed old football player who's gonna do things as he knows the right way. I think this team needed that. I think that defense needed that. There's a lot of young players on that defense who really need to be brought up into the NFL. And look, they don't really know much better or much differently at this point. So it's a younger defense that needs some of that I think that older school mentality. And I think it's going to be good for them. And kind of going back to Nick, when you brought some of these older guys, established coaches in here, especially a Vic Fangio, look, you only have to go back a few years to see what they put around Doug Peterson when they won a Super Bowl. It was Jim Schwartz on defense. And they used his experience as a head coach and his years in the league to really help counter and balance and be a resource for Doug Peterson to use. I think this is going to be something similar for Nick Sirianni, and I think it was a good move by the Eagles.
And Fangio has some new pieces to play with, because let's be real, James Bradberry was getting picked on worse than me at the lunch table in middle school.
Stop.
Scott, like, Bradberry was the target for everyone. They upgrade the secondary. Gardner Johnson comes in. They draft Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean. Obviously, Bryce Huff off the edge now. I swap him with Reddick. He's younger, more upside. Devin White, a really under-the-radar move. It does feel like the defense has the players to take that next step. Don't you feel that way?
It looks like they should. It's up to these guys to do it. The growth, like the Jalen Carter, he really needs to have a good year. Jordan Davis needs to have a good year. I'll tell you one guy who popped out with the eye test, right? Nolan Smith, when we see him come in and report to camp, dude, that dude was working this offseason, and you can see him. He was a first-round pick last year, didn't get a whole lot of reps last year, was hungry this offseason, it looks like, and really put the work in. Now we'll have to see how that translates on the field. You mentioned Bradbury. Bradbury today, first of all, I'm surprised the guy is still with the team, but he's here, and he was working with the second-team safeties today.
Oh, wow.
You talk about where is this guy fallen. That's where he's at right now. These good young players, and we're excited to see what Cooper DeJean might be able to do, but he's going to miss the first, it looks like, 3 weeks of practice with a hamstring injury he suffered while training and getting ready for this season. It won't affect him for the regular season, but obviously these are valuable reps the young guy needs to get. But they do have a lot of pieces here. They drafted heavily on the defense, and I think as we going back to what you were saying, it's going to be on these players to really take the next step now. They really need to build on the experience that a lot of them have. And under Vic Fangio, take those steps with his tutelage. And I think the tools are here. But again, as is the way in Philadelphia, still, you know, skeptical about linebacker. What do they really have there? We just don't know yet.
Scott Grayson, 97.3 ESPN Radio Eagles reporter, also Fox Philly sports anchor. Follow him on X at S. Grayson Fox 29. Well, I tell you what, they're bringing in Devin White, Bryce Huff. We mentioned Gardner Johnson, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, of course, who I did see is dealing with a bit of an injury. But there is a lot of positives coming back for this defense. I think if you had to close your eyes, Scott, and kind of foresee the end of the season, do you think the Eagles' offense is the better unit, or is the defense right now maybe a step ahead?
The way I look at it this season, where I'm sitting right now on day one of training camp, I look at this offense as being what will lead the way. And I think when you look at this defense, it's like, man, we don't need you to pitch any shutouts, guys. We don't even need you to hold them to less than 10. I just need you to hold them to about 20 or less. And this offense should be able to score. With Kellen Moore, his creativity, the weapons these guys have, of course, the great qualifier for every team is staying healthy. And if they can do that, you know, with Dallas Goedert at tight end, Saquon Barkley moving all over the field at running back, and then A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, what amounts to was really two number ones at receiver. Jalen Hurts was running around again, and his legs are all healthy again. I mean, this should lead the way. It really should be one of the top offenses in the league. So you just need this defense to not, you know, to not break apart and shatter. If they can hold opponents, I think the 20 points or less, I think this team's going to win a lot of games.
And Scott, what are you hearing about Saquon Barkley and how he's acclimated to the team, to the offense, how that you expect them to use him? What have been the early conversations about his arrival in Philly?
Well, it's what everybody wants to see versus what you think or what you can count on the Eagles to actually do. One of the things with the Eagles that I, you know, you want to see Saquon Barkley get the ball a lot. The guy's an electric player behind this line, which is better than New York's was, with this quarterback and these offensive weapons. When teams decide they're not going to take away Saquon and try to take away other pieces, you want to let Saquon, you know, you want to feed the beast. And I think there are fans here in Philly who wonder, will the Eagles try to have Saquon touches to a certain extent so that he's available at the end of the year and not getting too banged up during the course of this 17-game season? That is one of the concerns I know some fans have. Me, I'm looking for Saquon to get, 15 to 20 touches. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility per week. Now, will it be lower some weeks and higher in others? Yeah, possibly. But I think it's probably, you know, knowing the way the Eagles are, they only have one football to get to all these guys, it might end on being closer to 15 touches. But how are those touches? I mean, he's going to be out of the backfield. He was motioning around a lot today, you know, from all the reports we heard down at camp, too, that Kellen Moore is going to be incorporating a lot of motion. This team was so predictable last year offensively because they weren't motioning. They were easy to diagnose. That I think they're going to find every way they can to get Saquon out in open field behind this line at times and just let him do what he can do. That's what he was brought here for. And I think if he doesn't get to do that.
Good stuff, Scott. We got to cut you off. Appreciate the time. Scott Grayson, more Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, go to VSIN.com right now. Why? Well, we've got plenty of picks for tonight. Josh Applebaum betting splits for this Wednesday across the baseball universe. Steve Mackinnon's got power ratings, trends, all kinds of fun stuff. And like I mentioned, I'm watching it right now. I'm watching, I think it's Uzbekistan and Spain battling Olympic soccer. Well, Nigel Seeley's got some Olympic soccer picks and predictions for this upcoming tournament. All right, welcome back to Sharp Money. Very excited to go back out to the Progressive guest line right now and talk to this gentleman, Jake Croucher, lead betting analyst over at NBC Sports. Follow him on X at CroucherJD. And Jay, we were kind of talking about this during the break. I gave Dustin some crap about this bet a couple days ago. He gave me Francisco Lindor, 60-1 to win NL MVP. And I was like, you're crazy. There's no way that anyone but Otani or maybe Betts or Freeman, really, not Betts, is going to win this award this year. But hey, if Dustin's on it and if you're on it, maybe I need to change my tune. So tell me why Lindor's live in the MVP market.
Yeah, I think that everyone has anointed Otani, and he's certainly the guy that's most likely to win. But the thing is, even when there's a clear favorite, the rest of the book still has to go somewhere. And right now, books are saying that Otani is like an 80% chance to win MVP. I'd have a little bit lower than that, but that type of range. So the other 20-25% has to go somewhere. I think Bryce Harper is the second most likely guy to win. But I think Lindor should be third, just because if you're going to beat Otani, you have to do it in a different way. And I think Lindor is a really good comparison to Otani, and that, you know, Otani's weakness is he's a DH. So he obviously doesn't play defense. Lindor is arguably the best defensive player in the National League. He is by Fangraphs in terms of how they rate defense. And so you have a guy in Lindor who plays in New York City, which is always good in these awards of the New York media bias. He's on track to be 30 home runs, 30 steals, 7.5 to 8 war, potentially leading the league there on a Mets team with all the grimace stuff that has become one of the best stories in the league. So I think between war, between home runs and steals, and between Lindor's narrative that, look, I don't think that he is like neck and neck with Otani or anything, but I think he should be the third favorite for MVP, which in the 60-1 range makes him appetizing as a flyer.
Mm. Oh, I love it. We are so on the same page. But Jay, you've been behind the book. You've been booking action like this before. Now you're placing the bets. And here's my frustration when I'm betting into these markets, because they're voted on by the writers and all these people, media members vote for these awards, is the narrative that it's a best player award. If it's a best player award, why isn't it most outstanding player or best player? Why is it most valuable player? And we want to add in what Lindor's doing as a leader for the Mets when they're in tumultuous times, looking like they were going to be sellers. And you can correlate the Mets, not just with Grimace throwing out the first pitch, but Francisco Lindor getting hot, especially from the left side of the plate facing righties, as a reason why the Mets have catapulted themselves into the playoff picture. So as a bookmaker, can you kind of help us understand how you place a number on this when you know, despite it being most valuable player in all sports, it's likely going to the best player?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Look, all these awards have very silly elements to them, which I think largely people don't like. I like it because I think it creates inefficiencies and ways to bet into these markets to take advantage of it. With Lindor specifically, I think the way you have to think about it, where if it's a close race between him and Otani, everyone's going to want to vote for Lindor because Otani wins MVP every single year. He's a DH. Lindor is going to have a lot more narrative. And I think that it's all about kind of pricing out how close does Lindor need to get to Otani's offensive stats? Because Lindor's not going to get to Otani's OPS and his homer numbers. It's just how close does he have to get? I think if Lindor can get his OPS up to like 870, 880, Otani falls closer to, you know, 995, a touch over 1.00. I think that Lindor, if he gets past him in war, if the Mets surge into the playoffs, I think at that point that he can actually win MVP.
It is an interesting discussion around Otani because he's DHing this year. He's not, he's not playing the field. He's basically half of what he really is as a player. And how much do the voters knock him for that? I'm curious. It is going to be an interesting vote to see if he really does run away with the market, even though that's what the market's telling you right now. See if he runaways with the votes as we get to the end of the rainbow. And the MVP stuff in the NFL, like, it's pretty easy, Jay. Just pick the team that's going to have the best record, right? Pick that quarterback, and you're probably going to have the MVP that year. Baseball, a little more nuanced, right? Mike Trout's won it a bunch of times. The Angels were never really a good team. So it's always interesting to track the votes. Let's go to the NFL now, because I always like when you tell me if you're higher or lower on a team relative to market. I think the Bills right now are a team that maybe overall the sentiment is down, but maybe that opens up an opportunity where the market's not really fully representing how good Buffalo can be this year.
Yeah, I think the narrative around the Bills is that they have taken a bit of a step back because they lost all these big names. But these guys that they lost, I think they were big mainly in name as opposed to overall impact last season. Stephon Diggs is obviously the biggest one. Stephon Diggs wasn't good the second half of the season. He fell off a cliff. Guys that they lost, like Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White got injured like 3 weeks into the season last year. He didn't give them much. Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, these guys are on the downslope of their careers. I think that when you look at the Bills, last year, everything went wrong for them outside of Allen staying healthy. They had a ton of injuries. Their defense was decimated. Diggs fell off. And they were still the two seed. And if Sherfield or Diggs could catch one of those Josh Allen bombs in the divisional round against Kansas City, then they would have been in the AFC title game. So I think with the Bills, that people have maybe lost sight of the fact that this year they're likely going to be healthier on defense. And they still have Josh Allen at quarterback, who I think is the second best quarterback in the league. So I bet a bit of the Bills at 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. I think there's still some 16-1, 18-1 out there. Like right now, their Super Bowl odds are almost double Baltimore's. Like, I just can't get there. I think that the Bills, they're still, look, the Chiefs should be the favorite in the AFC, but I think the Bills are right there in that next lot of teams.
That's always funny, Jay, too, because, like, when it comes to futures, we have so much time to think, and, like, I'm kind of down on the Bills, but now that you kind of lay out your point, I'm thinking, well, how do we handle the Bills during the regular season? Is the head coach good? Does he win a lot? Check. Is the quarterback healthy? Is he there? Does he win a lot? Check. That's all the information we generally need to decide if a team is good, despite them losing a lot of pieces. Those two guys, the head coach McDermott and Josh Allen, can figure it out. Now let's go to the other end. A team that you may be lower on that I know everyone loves. They had the number one pick. They even had another pick in the top 10 and added a receiver. Why are you a little bit lower on the Bears than the rest of the market right now?
So I think the easiest way to fade a team is to just look at, look, you would rather a team be better on offense than on defense in terms of stability year to year. Defense is just flukier because it's so dependent on turnovers, whereas if you have just Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, you're just going to have a good offense every single year. And the Bears, who had an awesome defense in the second half of the season, a lot of that was built off of turnovers. They led the league in interceptions, which is very fluky, and that's unlikely to be repeated. And then just look at the names on the defense. Like, yeah, Jalen Johnson, he's a monster. He's amazing. But on the defensive line, like, people talked about Montez Sweat arriving as though the Bears had added Myles Garrett. Like, Montez Sweat's very good, but he's not an all-world defensive end. I think the team still has some issues in terms of just star power on the defense. Look, I don't think it's going to be a bad defense, but I think that some people are expecting this is going to be like a top 5-6 unit. I'm not there. What they do have in their favor is that the schedule is relatively easy, and I think the offense is clearly going to be better. I think there's a very good chance the Bears actually have a better offense than they do defense. We also need to see Matt Eberflus prove it in the NFL. I don't think the early returns have been fantastic on him as a head coach. So, look, right now the Bears are around pick to make the playoffs. I would be on the no side of that. Even though they have an easy-ish schedule, they're still in a tough division. I think the Packers and Lions right now are still clearly in front of them.
Yeah, you can make a case that Vikings roster is really good. They just got to figure out the quarterback situation. But, hey, if Kevin Stefanski can get that playoff to get the Browns into the playoffs with Joe Flacco, who knows? Maybe Kevin O'Connell can get the Vikings into the playoffs with the Sam Darnold, J.J. McCarthy consortium there. Let's stay in that division for a minute, because I do think the top of it, I mean, goodness gracious, Green Bay just surprised everyone, especially the back half of last year. And you want to talk about culture in the NFL. Is there a culture right now in the league better than what the Lions have brewing with Dan Campbell out there in the Motor City? I mean, that is a really uphill battle for a rookie quarterback, two very established cultures in front of them in that NFC North.
Absolutely. And look, the Lions, they're just rock solid, and the roster is is excellent. The offensive line is perhaps the best in the NFL. The question mark is always Jared Goff, but I think he's kind of proven the past couple of years that he is just a solid above average quarterback. I thought that he was impressive in the NFC title game against San Francisco, even though they lost that. The issue with the Lions is just that they are going to be so dependent on Amon-Ra St. Brown. And if he misses any time, then all of a sudden you're asking for someone like Jameson Williams to really step up. And he's got the talent, but he's never really done it before. So look, I think the Lions, they should be a regular season wins machine. And then the Packers, who you mentioned, I think it's not gone under the radar necessarily, but hasn't been perhaps focused on that in the back half of the season. Jordan Love was close to the best quarterback in football statistically. They were an absolute monster. We all remember how they decimated the Cowboys. So, look, I think there is a very good chance that the Packers, if they can just get a bit healthier, because they did it last year with a lot of injuries at receiver, on defense. I think that team has the upside to be the one seed in the NFC.
Jay Croucher, NBC Sports lead betting analyst. Also catch him on the Fantasy Football Happy Hour and, of course, the Bet the Edge podcast. Follow him on X at Croucher JD. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Jay Croucher, there he goes. Great stuff. Loving the Mets. Lindor, maybe I'm a little bit lower on Mr. Francisco than others. Maybe I need to get higher. We'll close up. Sharp money on the other side here on Visa.